presenting Hop Harrigan, America's Ace of the Airwaves.
The X-4 calling control tower. The X-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in. Yes, it's America's Ace of the Airways coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
Say, gang, when you make a long-distance phone call, nobody thinks anything of it. It's taken pretty much for granted. You lift up the phone, ask for long distance, give the number, and are connected. But making that connection is a big job. And now planes are being used to help make that job a little easier. Most of our long-distance telephone lines are buried underneath the ground in cables, but there are still a few above ground. For years now, telephone and telegraph companies have kept big crews of men on the job patrolling the cables that are above ground and keeping a watch over the routes of the underground cables also. This is an expensive and inefficient operation, though, because no matter how big the crew, only a certain number of miles can be covered in any given day. A few months ago, the American Telephone and Telegraph Company decided to patrol their lines with planes, and so hired an Oklahoma aviation company to do it. Pilots started covering the lines in special planes just 8 months ago, and today they cover literally thousands of miles of cables in many states. One pilot flying his special plane can cover 8,000 to 10,000 miles of line a week, which is much more than a man can do on foot. These special planes are all metal and use 80 horsepower engines. They can land in any kind of a pasture or small level stretch. When they're patrolling the lines above ground, of course, it's fairly easy. And to help them out in covering underground cable, the telephone company has put up markers, which can be seen as high up as 500 feet. I'll give you some examples of just how these cable pilots work in just a few minutes, so don't forget to listen. And now to our story. The mystery of the vanishing men has come to a sudden, startling climax as a small group of people gathers in the living room of Aunt Agatha's house. Mr. Barnshaw, owner of the carnival where the trouble began, Misto, the magician, eccentric little Charlie, and Sheriff Quimby of Lakeville. Gail and Bill King, the reporter, stood to one side after closing the door and watched Hop standing in the center of the room, calmly eyeing each of his visitors, and as they gradually fell silent under his penetrating stare, he made a startling announcement.
The man who whistles, the man who made Tank disappear and who attacked John Temple, is here in this room.
Hop's words struck with the force of a thunderbolt. For a split second, no one moved. And then, as though at a given signal, everyone spoke at once.
Just a minute, please. Please.
Hey, folks, relax. Will you give Hop a chance?
What are you waiting for, Harrigan? Tell us who it is.
Hop, please, don't keep us in suspense. It's much too serious.
I realize that, Gail, but first, to understand the whole thing, we'll have to go back to the beginning.
When the carnival arrived in town?
A little before that, Bill, when you arrived.
Oh, sure.
You told us you were on the trail of a man who made people disappear, a man who constantly whistled a funeral march.
Yeah, that's right.
And who had already caused the disappearance of 12 people all over the country.
Uh-huh. I tacked on him 2 weeks ago, and I've been following him since.
Hop, we know all that.
Sorry, Gail. I just want to get my facts straight. Well, then, you, Bill, Tank, and myself went down to the station to meet the 1220 train. You were sure the man who whistles would be on it. And after that, we followed a false scent. Your father, Gail, remember?
Yeah, I remember all right.
Then, when we went back to the station, Tank was gone. Well, one of two things could have happened. He'd found the man who whistles, or vice versa.
Yeah, but when we went to the carnival, we saw a Tank, and he took a poke at you.
Uh-huh. And I was pretty dumb about it. I didn't realize he was really trying to protect me.
You mean he knew who this fellow was, the man who whistled?
That's right, Sheriff. Well, the next day, we went back to the fairgrounds and saw him again. But before we could speak to him, he disappeared through Misto the Magician's box on the stage.
Now, wait a minute, Harrigan. You can't pin anything on Misto.
I know it, Mr. Bonshaw, because Tank didn't actually disappear in his tent. The man who whistles got him in the funhouse.
And then hit him in the balloon.
Right. And by the time we figured that out, the balloon had broken loose and we had to chase it.
I remember that one all right. I sure do.
Well, we managed to get the balloon down, but Tank was injured in the fall. So he still couldn't tell us who the man who whistles was. And by then, he must have been sure.
What makes you say that?
Because he made another attempt to get Tank at the hospital.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Then John Temple came into the case and straightened us out.
You mean he told you who it was?
No, he made us stop and think. Well, Temple, Miss Nolan, and I went back to the carnival this morning. And there he was slugged. Not only slugged, but he was given a sedative to keep him quiet. rather strange, don't you think?
I thought it was, too.
If Temple knew so much, why not kill him and get it over with?
Hey, that's an angle.
An important one, Bill. The same applies to Tank. Now, why weren't they killed? They were obviously close to the answer to the mystery.
Well, why, huh?
For all his supposed deadliness, our pal isn't a killer. He doesn't want to get into too much trouble.
Well, he's in deep enough already, by gosh.
Now, for the three messages.
Jack.
Oh, yes, Charlie.
I told you before. I didn't write them.
Yes, I know, Charlie. And, by the way, do you have your elephants with you?
Why,
What's this about elephants?
Charlie wants to trade four elephants for one hippopotamus, Sheriff.
Oh, he does he? Well, say it aloud. No elephants in the township of Lakeville, by gum. County ordinance says so.
Oh, dear.
Sheriff, I don't think we have to worry about it too much. Charlie, why don't you drop it?
Why, certainly would do no such thing. I'd hurt him.
I'm talking about you, Charlie. The case is over.
But what is this?
Mr. Bonshaw, suppose you tell us.
Well, okay. Cut it, Charlie. You're a bum detective anyhow.
What?
Well, gosh, Mr. Bonshaw, I did my best. You just didn't give me enough time, that's all.
Hey, what gives here?
Charlie's a private detective, Bill, hired by Mr. Bonshaw.
Yes, I wanted to track down this business of the funeral march myself.
Well, I'll be...
Jack. Want to buy an elephant?
You really had us rolling, Charlie. Especially me.
Rolling? I was all set to buy him a padded cell.
Then you must know who gave you the messages.
I'm afraid I don't, Miss Nolan. I told you the truth. I didn't see the man who gave them to me. It was too dark.
And why did you whistle a funeral march?
Well, I was just trying to start something to see what would happen.
Well, to come back to the messages, the fact that they were in verse showed the writer was quite an egotist. He wanted to make a big splash out of the case. He wanted to show that his work was distinctive.
So?
That's item number two, Gail. He isn't a killer, and he's a show-off.
Harrigan, will you stop talking in generalities and tell us who he is?
Hey, in a minute, Mr. Bonshaw. There's just one more question. What did the man who whistles want? Well, I got the answer finally through a phone call.
At last.
Who was it from, huh?
The FBI. Remember John called them to check on all the other disappearances, Gail?
Yes.
Well, no one had disappeared.
No? Well, then... And Bill...
Now, wait a minute, huh?
You wait, pal, because you've got a lot of explaining to do.
They're wrong. Those people did disappear.
Only in your imagination. You see, I made another telephone call to the Continental News Service, and they told me you weren't working for them anymore, that you'd been fired 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's right, but I was going back.
Sure, you were going back, you hoped. You built up this whole thing trying to get a big splash for yourself in the papers. As a matter of fact, they told me they just received a wire from you telling them you were on a hot story, asking them to put you back on the payroll.
A wire? Hop, we saw him coming out of the telegraph office.
That's when he sent it.
You're talking through your hat.
Am I? You went to Mr. the Magician in New City and offered him $200 to whistle the funeral march when the carnival played Lakeville. He did it for one night when they were unloading at the railroad station. That's why Tank went off on his own. He heard Mr. He followed him to the fairgrounds and then spoke to Mr. Bonshaw. Didn't he, Mr. Bonshaw?
Well, yes.
And you were afraid to talk because Tank disappeared the next day. That's why you put a private detective on.
But why didn't Tank say so when you saw him?
Because Bill was with me at the time.
Harrigan, you're blowing up a real pretty pipe dream.
Well, keep listening, pal. When Tank dropped through the trap door, you were underneath the stage. You probably tried to give him a hypo or knock him out, but he was too fast for you. You ran and he chased you into the funhouse. But there, in the dark, you managed to knock him out. You dumped him into the balloon to hide him temporarily, and then gave Charlie message number one. And you slipped number two into my pocket when I wasn't looking.
Harrigan, you're making us all up.
Then, later on, you tried to pull Tank down out of the balloon, but something happened. You got rattled, let the brake go, and the balloon pulled loose. I'll give you credit for that much. It was an accident.
Good heavens. He followed the balloon in the sheriff's car.
Right. And when he finally caught up, he gave Tank another love tap over the head to keep him quiet again. Sheriff, you said he went on ahead, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. He sure did. Only found him when he let out a yip.
You brought him to the hospital and then tried to get rid of him again. But he wasn't unconscious, so you had to run for it.
That's a lie.
Is it? Then how did you know that attempt had been made? We didn't tell you about it, and yet when I mentioned it a few minutes ago, you remembered it quite distinctly.
I didn't.
Yes, you did. Then this morning you went out to the fairgrounds, waited for us, and knocked out John Temple.
That's a beautiful story, Harrigan. But you can't prove a thing.
Oh, I can't, eh? Gail, open the hall door, will you?
Oh, yes, of course.
There's your proof, Phil.
Tank! It's Tank!
Hello, Gail.
How about it, Tank?
That's him, all right. That's a dirty little rat.
Standing in the hall, Tank's tremendous bulk completely blocks the door. The final proof that Bill King was responsible, in his bitter, mistaken way, for the mystery of the vanishing men. We'll bring you the strange climax of today's episode in just a minute, so stand by. Now let's talk some more about patrolling telephone cables, one of the newest jobs in aviation. A few weeks ago, down in Oklahoma, a pilot was flying his patrol covering an underground cable when he spotted an oil drilling crew getting ready to put up a derrick. Now, putting up a derrick requires much digging, and the pilot realized at once that according to the markers, the oil drilling crew would surely cut across one of the cables if they kept on digging, so he wrote a note warning the crew and dropped it to them in the mailing tube. They stopped at once, thus saving a break which might have tied up transcontinental service for hours. Another time, a pilot was flying his route after a bad rainstorm and noticed that a lot of earth had been washed away from a pole carrying long-distance wires. The pole was just about ready to fall, taking the wires with it, so the pilot sent a message to the nearest repair station, and a crew was on the job almost immediately, repairing the damage. The planes used in this operation with a special construction often can land right alongside the danger spot, and sometimes men working in a pasture are more than a little surprised when a silvery monoplane drops down beside them, the pilot gets out and comes over and tells them to watch out for such and such a spot because they might cut into a telephone cable. Outside of the markers, which aren't very noticeable except from the air, there's no way of telling exactly where a cable is, and the men are usually mystified, wondering how the pilot knew where the cable was, until he explains he's carrying a map of the whole system, and he's helped by those ground markers. Yes, patrolling the cables is a brand new business for aviation. Right now, it looks like it's a job that aviation can do better than anything else. Maybe you'd like to have this job in aviation when you get older. But gang, no matter what aviation job you do, always remember, America needs flyers! And now back to our story. A massive four-engine transport drones steadily through the night sky over the desert in the great southwest. In the flight cabin, the pilot and co-pilot sit, completely relaxed and a little bored by the monotony.
What a war sure was nice like this, Frank. I think of some of them fighter sweeps over the channel when we broke through at San Lo.
Oh, baby, it got plenty hot.
You don't have to tell me. We didn't exactly have a picnic at Guadalcanal, you know. The Japs were as thick as flies.
Makes this look like a milk run, don't it?
I'm having trouble keeping awake. Now, if I had a couple of zeros trying
hey,
to...
Hey, wait a minute.
What's eating you?
You said zeros, didn't you?
Yeah, why?
Now, look straight out. Wait, Scott, ain't that a zero?
I'll say it isn't. It's turning to make a pass it up.
As the two men sit rooted in their chairs, they see a zero, garishly illuminated in an eerie green light, suddenly bank sharply and roar toward them head-on. Gang, this is the beginning of Hops and Tank's latest action-packed adventure, The Riddle of the Ghostly Avengers. So don't miss the first spine-tingling episode. Tune in and fly with Top Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. So long, Hops. We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Hop Harrigan is a transcribed, copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine and is brought to you Monday through Friday, same time, same mutual station.